This is Marcia Brugman. This is Thursday, July 7th, 1977. We're at the Parkland Branch Library. And this afternoon, we're interviewing Mr. Lonnie Harbin, who's a longtime resident of the Parkland area. Mr. Harbin, can you tell me when you were born? What year?
1980. Okay, October
what was the date?
October 12th, 1980.
What were your parents' names?
Ida Harbin and Frank Harbin. And ten children to the family, and all of them's dead but me.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Were you the youngest
child?
Yeah,
I was a baby. Yeah.
Oh, you were the baby.
12-pound baby when I was born.
You're kidding. Good heavens. Did your mother have, all her babies were big?
Yeah, well, no, they was normal. Everybody was, back there then, a 12-pound baby was considered a healthy baby, but today we doesn't have that.
Yeah.
And
where were you born, at home or in a hospital?
At home.
Mm-hmm. Where'd your family
midwife. We was at Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, and your mother had a midwife then?
Yeah.
To help.
Back in those days. But later, we moved here when I was 4 years old.
Mm-hmm. Why'd you move to Louisville? Or why'd you
Had some relatives here. Mm-hmm. And after my father died, then we moved here, and my auntie lived 3622 Hale. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew her as Aunt Sue. And she cared for more people and helped more ministers on their way up.
Hmm.
All they had to do is say they were working for the ministry, and they go there, and they could stay and eat and sleep, and she never charged them a nickel.
Hmm.
But she believed in that work.
Mm-hmm.
And when we came, well, we lived 3622 Hale, mm-hmm. and she lived 3622 Hale,
mm-hmm.
right
next. Was she your mother's sister?
Father's sister.
Oh, okay. But did your mother move with you and the other children up here to be by this Aunt Sue?
Yeah.
What did your father die of when you were so young?
Well, I think that he had a heart condition, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember I was quite young at the time.
And you were four when you moved into the Parkland area then?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I went to school at Virginia Avenue. They had 36 in Virginia, which was a big school there now. But when you went to the fourth grade, you had to go to Phyllis Sweeter School, which was 16th and St. Catherine.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to walk from here down to 16th St. Catherine.
Wow.
The school after you got to the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And they had...
who were you saying? You said something interesting before we turned on the tape about who had started that Virginia Avenue church or school. That wasn't always in existence, was it?
The school was there, but the big school was George Hill.
Mm-hmm.
He was instigator of getting the school to go past the fourth grade. In other words, we had to walk from Parkland all the way to 16th St. Catherine to complete your eighth grade.
All right.
After you passed the fourth grade down there, then you had to walk up there and go there to get the rest of the eighth grade to the common school.
Mm-hmm. So this Mr. Hill made it possible then for everybody to go ahead and stay at Virginia Avenue.
He got the committee together and got the people together and signed, and we got a school down there where we wouldn't have to walk that far.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a pretty well thought of a person in the neighborhood. He had groceries, he had ice wagon, and then he had the taxi service. He used to be at a 7th Street station.
Oh.
Him and his son, and he was pretty well up mm-hmm. on these kind of things,
mm-hmm.
and he went forward for the people. And
it does seem kind of unreasonable to think that children that little would have to walk that far to go to school. That's quite a way out of Parkland.
And we thought nothing about it, walking. Those that had bicycles rode bicycles, and
mm-hmm.
we'd all meet going up Grand, and everybody get about the same time, and we get to school about 20 after 8.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be there at 8:30.
Mm-hmm. Were a lot of your other brothers and sisters were a lot of your other brothers and sisters are right around your age? I know you were the youngest, but yeah. Did you have a whole group of older brothers and sisters who went ahead and walked on to school with you and
yeah.
this kind of thing?
Well, they did. And then they all walked to school up there, and then when they finished, they went to Central High, which was at 8th and Chestnut then. Mm-hmm. And it's been towed down. New Central is built.
That's quite a walk, too, from the Parkland area.
Yeah.
Did you go to Central?
Yeah.
It's, what year did you graduate from Central?
Well, I didn't graduate in Central. I graduated, I was 26. Mm-hmm. And then graduated from night school in 27. Mm-hmm. And...
what other kinds of things can you remember about your early school years, say at the Virginia Avenue school? Do you remember much about the way the teachers were? Of course, it was an all-black school. Do you remember anything about whether the discipline was real strict?
Yeah, the discipline was strict then, and you had very good order, because the person knew if you got out of line, the teacher had to... privilege of giving them whipping, send them home, or whatnot. And at that time, they was pretty strict, and boys obeyed the parents, and they obeyed the teachers. Mm-hmm. You didn't have much trouble, but like you do today.
Yeah.
You didn't have to expel anybody from school, and then if you knew, if you done wrong and went home, and told your parents you got a whipping at home, too.
You so couldn't win, huh?
You couldn't win, so that made them all stay in line.
Yeah. Was it pretty, well, of course, now your daddy was dead, but what would that have meant to your mother? Was she pretty strict?
Oh, yeah. They,
with 10 children, I bet she had to be.
All
she?
Of those times, people was strict, and then your next-door neighbor, if he saw you doing something, he was capable of whipping you, too. You didn't have to ask you. You get him back in line, and he would tell the parents, see. And the parents had that, the other neighbors had that privilege, you know. And I think it made better people back there in those days. We thought we got whippings unnecessary, but at the same time, I believe it, today I appreciate them.
Yeah, right. Did your, was your education important to your mother? Did she want
yeah.
you to go to school?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I wanted to be a doctor.
Oh.
And I was pretty well up on medicine and stuff like that, you know, the human anatomy. So I worked and went to school, and you know how boys are those days. They get to making good little money, and then they, well, I go 2 weeks later after school started, and that's where I dropped out, see. Oh. But later went on and finished up at night school. Mm-hmm. And... at that time, money went way a long distance. You could buy most anything for little money.
Right.
So money was a problem, and we had a pretty good living. See, I mean, we didn't want for anything. We raised a garden, and we had stuff to feed the people and feed us too. See, because mm-hmm. she really believed in being economy. See,
your mother did.
Yeah.
Did she work outside of the home? Or
no.
She managed all 10
children. Well, when the boys got larger, they went to work in factories, see.
Mm-hmm. And helped her out then?
Yeah, and they helped him out. And then mm-hmm. I had a brother, he went to the service in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have been exempted from going to service on kind of helping the mother out with the children.
Mm-hmm.
But he went on, and they got... we managed by a different one working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Boys have gotten up big enough to work then, see.
Did you ever remember as a kid, especially since you were the youngest one, were you ever aware that you were doing without anything? Did you feel like it was awful hard to make it without a dad to work?
No. She was a pretty good manager. And the brothers, there was 7 brothers and 3 girls.
Mm-hmm.
And we all done, the girl, they worked out in service. Mm-hmm. And the boy, they always picked up a job. One fellow worked at, one brother worked at the cooper shop, I guess somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 years.
Wow.
And he started young and just continued to work for him. Mm-hmm. Then he died in 1917. The influenza struck struck the whole United States. Mm-hmm. And I had one brother and one sister to die within 30 days.
Oh, wow. They must have been pretty fairly young people even then.
Yeah, they was, mm-hmm. I forget how, they were grown, but they died 30 days apart. Well, mm-hmm. people were just dying quite often then.
Yeah.
See, that just epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were buried, they were buried in Greenwood Cemetery, and one was buried in front of the other with one row between them, right behind each other. Just a coincidence that that happened, see.
Mm.
And those days we had doctors, and I guess they'd done the best they could, but they wasn't aware of the thing that we have today and know as much.
Even
about.
Now, influenza can really knock people low.
Yeah.
So in an epidemic, it must have been awful.
It was. People was dying quite often.
Did most of the rest of your sisters and brothers live to adulthood, though?
Yeah, everybody lived to adulthood.
The rest of the, besides these, well, these other two were young adults, but they died of influenza.
Yeah.
Then what happened to your other brothers and sisters out of this large family?
Well, gradually they all died one at a time in a space of... I guess 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a brother die last year. So that was the end of just the two of us until then.
Wow. How many years ago did your mother pass away?
She passed in 45.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then she passed with a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
She was out in the yard getting ready to go to church that Sunday, and she walked out to get the eggs out of the hen house. People raised chicken back in those days. You didn't know what a frozen chicken was. And the chicken tastes better.
Yeah.
And then at that time, people would put a chicken up that they were going to kill for to eat. Mm-hmm. They put him up 2 weeks and let him eat corn.
Oh, so fattened him up.
Yeah, and then they say that cleaning him out of the filth that they pick up off the ground.
Uh-huh.
You put him up in what we call a coop.
Oh, right. So you isolated them and fed them.
Fed them.
Better stuff, fattened them up, and cleaned them out.
And then they cleaned them out, and the chicken tastes better then. And she come back in, she got the eggs and came back in the house, and she fell on the way coming into the house.
Mm.
And I had one brother to die in his sleep.
Oh.
He was... He complained a little bit, but back there then the doctors were so far between.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't go to the doctor. And then when he found out, his heart had stopped beating at night, see.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning, he was dead. He worked at the cooper shop, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to ride bicycles back and forth from work. And they said that had a tendency to help people out then, too.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a... exercise.
Right.
And
not only was the work harder, but you had a little physical exercise getting to the work. Oh, gosh. Well, you moved into the Parkland area when you were four, so that would have been about 1912. What do you remember about the area when you moved in here? You were talking about some about the dirt roads and stuff. Is it country?
Yeah, it was old. It wasn't built up like it is now. You could stand, there's a lot of space. Now, they used to have circuses at where Tube Turn is now, 28 uh-huh. and Broadway. Well, circus used to come to town about 5 or 6 times a year. And when they wasn't there, people used to herd the cows. One family over there, 34th and Kirby,
mm-hmm.
Porters. They used to carry the cows across the street all the way over there to where Tube Turns is now, and let them feed and then bring them back at night.
Wow.
They didn't have little chains on them or nothing, just a bunch of cows, see.
Of course, that's the middle of the city now.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe. Oh, goodness.
And all these circuses used to come, and they'd go up Broadway to Second Street, down Main Street. At that time, Main Street was a pretty good street. And then they'd come back in and circle all the way around, come back to 28th and Broadway, and that drew the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have terrible crowds there at night, you know, and they had two performers, 2 o'clock in the evening and 6 o'clock at night.
Do you remember going to the circus when you were a kid?
Oh, yes, we used to go. Well, one thing, we used to go over there and see, that's where everybody, when the circus in town, everybody would go over there and all the boys around the corner where we hung out, circus in town, and sometimes they'd go over there and they'd let one of the boys ride the elephant head through the circus and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would go over there and you'd help them to set up the tents.
Mm-hmm.
They had people before that.
Yeah.
But they would get the other boys, and of course they'd get it up faster.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd give them a ticket so they could go into the circus.
So you got over there, did a little odd jobs and stuff, and then earned your way in.
Oh. And earned your way in.
Huh. So the area was pretty country and everything. What were the roads like? Where'd the city roads end?
Well, the city road really ended at Arlene, and what is Dumanil now, that was the city limits there. And that's something else. They changed names from during 1718. They changed names from Bismarck to Hale Avenue.
Oh, and Dumanil was Orleans.
Dumanil was Orleans.
Oh.
And
that was the city limit, so anything south of that was country.
Yeah, that was the city limit at that time.
Gee, and it goes out for miles now, almost
and
to Fort
And where the Carter's home and Southwick home was farms.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a man named Raymond Rhinesteller. And I can't think of the other. There's several of them. We used to go out there and pick potatoes and onions and beans and thing like that,
mm-hmm.
as kids, and then we earned our money, and then we come on back in. We had our spending money,
oh.
work about a half a day, and then we come on back.
And that's out those little farms. Then we're out where the Cotter and Lang housing projects are now.
That's it.
Wow. Now, what was the name of the street that you and your mom moved in on at first? What was the name?
Hale.
On Hale. Now
it was Bismarck then, but it changed Hale.
Have you lived on Hale all your life?
No, I've been all over Parkland all my life, mm-hmm. but I've only been out of Parkland one time, and that was in the project.
Mm.
Beecher Terrace, I moved there for 11 years.
Oh.
And I left there in 51, and I came back to 1117 38th Street. I built on the house of my sister. Of course, she was dead. My niece lived there then, and I built some rooms on back there and put a bath in. And then I bought another house on Hale again, 3506 Hale.
Right, now that's where you live now, isn't
it? Yeah. And I live about four doors down. That was on Hale. Then I live 38th in Hale. Then I live 3816 Grand. Live 3506 Grand, 3402 Grand.
Where in Parkland haven't you lived?
And then I live 4002 Grand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lived on Greenwood, 3513 Greenwood, I believe it was. And then I lived on Kirby, 3616 Kirby. And then I moved from there. That was right after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived 1102 34th Street. That's right at Hale again.
Yeah.
And I was there when the flood come, and the water come out of the cesspool, out of the corner of the street.
Yeah, right.
And it come up to the second window, and I was working in the Willow Terrace apartment. And so I left and went, when the water come up, I had a big, a tall yard. Mm-hmm. You had some steps from the street, and then got to the porch, you had three more steps. Yeah. I said, oh, don't worry about the water. I said, when it comes up past this yard, I said, I'd begin to worry. So they were sticking matches there to see that this water, how much it was rising. And so I went on to work that night. I worked at the Willow Tears, and Samuel L. Matz owned that at that time. Mm. And I was night man. I had charge of a pass key to everybody's apartment, see, there and over to Dartmouth, too. Mm. So he said, well, get there any kind of way you could, and we would pay you cab fare. What way? So I went on and got there, and that morning about 2 o'clock they called me. I said, y'all just excited. I said, go back and go to sleep. I said, the water gonna rise a little bit, but it'll go down, because I'd never experienced that.
Yeah.
Then 4 o'clock they called again, you must come home, so this water's rising awful fast. Well, I called my boss and he gave me some overshoes and called a cab, and I rode 28th Street as far as Garland. Mm-hmm. He brought me from Willa Avenue, 1416 Willa, down here. And he cut the cab, cut the meat off right here, 28th in Virginia, and he couldn't get across Virginia. And he went these cross streets out, 28th Street, to see where it could get. And he got down Garland to 32nd Street. And that's as far as he could go, and I crossed. I got out and paid him and crossed people's yard and got home. And then they started moving out. Everybody was moving out. And they had trucks to come, so we moved out and got the majority of our stuff out. And then I had a sister-in-law. She lived at 7th and Walnut. Mm-hmm. And they lived second floor. The kids, they went up there, two of them. And one stayed with us, so we went to Newburgh, what's is Foster Forest Baptist Church used to be. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there, and I stayed there one night, and I called in, and one of the fellows that lived at Mr. Glogar lived in the apartment where I worked. He came out and got me. Mm-hmm. And we spent 6 weeks up there on the 8th floor and no water wouldn't get there, but there wasn't no water around us up there, right. See.
Mm-hmm. How far did the water get up on your house then? Did it come up all
floor.
That? On the
it got all the way up to the second window. Halfway up to second
clear
floor.
Clear up that big yard, all those steps, up
yeah,
the porch,
up there, yeah.
And up to the second floor. How much damage did it do your house then?
All the damage.
Was there anything left?
The house was okay. It had to be cleaned. The mud had to be cleaned out and dried out. But all the other stuff we just had to throw out. You know, like washing machines and Victrolas and things like that. They had to throw all that water got
That's
in
awful.
It.
Awful. How'd you ever clean it up?
Well, we just had to clean ever so often, clean so much each day. Mm-hmm. And
people scrub. Said the mud was so bad.
It was. The mud had settled in there, and of course, but us not going back for 6 weeks mm-hmm. made it worse because the mud had dried out mm-hmm. and made it harder. So we labored and got around there and then had the house papered and cleaned up and finally got back, but I soon moved to Beecher Terrace after that. I moved, stayed about 6 weeks, about 6 months. And then Beecher Terrace had the second openings mm-hmm. moving in. One bunch moved in September, and I moved in October. Mm-hmm. And from then on, I stayed in Beecher Terrace for 11 years and come back to Park.
Let me pick back up. I want to come back to some of these other later years, but let me pick back up to when you were a child in the Parkland area. I want to ask you about, see if you remember about some things. What about ice wagons? People talked a lot about having ice boxes then, not having refrigerators. Remember anything
well,
about the ice wagons?
Oh, yeah, I worked on one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I used to work with this fella, Percy Curry. And Henry Lee. And, of course, George Hill, I didn't work with him. Mm-hmm. At that time, they had ice boxes, which remind you of a refrigerator today, mm-hmm. but it had where we have a freezing unit, you put your ice up there.
Big, like block of ice.
50-pound block. If you had a bigger one, you put 100-pound. Mm-hmm. And then you put that up there in the freezer and then shut your doors. And the, on the side, you had the shelf just like a refrigerator today. Mm-hmm. And it kept for a day or two. Mm-hmm. 50-pound ice sometime run you 2 days.
And then, what, it melted a little bit, and then melting. You have to buy another one.
Then you used to have to put a pan under there to catch the water, and if you let the water run over, you had to mop it up off the floor.
Never-ending cleanup then.
No.
Huh?
And, of course, things you want to keep, like meats and things, you put in there with the ice, mm-hmm. just like you do your freezing unit on the refrigerator today.
About how old were you when you worked on the ice wagon?
I'd say about 10 years old.
You helped one of the ice men? What? Where'd they get their ice?
Falls City Brewing Company. They made ice then. And every ice wagon would go over there and get blocks of ice. Mm-hmm. 300 pound to a block, and then you had your ice picks and you cut your 100 pound. Then they had the hooks and they put a pad on your shoulder and you carried it 100 pound wherever you was going. Of course, a smaller 50 pound you carried those ice hooks and you pull up on them, they clamp in ice and mm-hmm. stick and hold it.
Was it horse and wagon kind
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, horse and
so
wagon.
So you go down there, you cut your ice and everything
yeah.
and load That's it up.
Well, people had a card and you on your route, they'd stick this card up and on all four corners had different sizes, see. Mm. Now, if you want a 50 pound, a 25 pound, a 100 pound, ever what card it was had a number here and you just turn it up and mm-hmm. when he come he know what to bring in the house because you see this card in
so
the
so he
window.
Wouldn't have to go up the door and yeah. say what do you want and then go back and get it
and then he cut it there at the ice wagon and take it on in.
Oh, so he didn't actually cut it then at Falls City, he brought it out here.
No,
and then
you
cut
bought
it,
he bought it at Falls City in 300 pound blocks.
Oh, I see.
Solid block, 300 pound mm-hmm. it's about this wide and about that long.
Oh.
And then you put in your wagon and you just push them all up there and maybe you get 15 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go out and then you come back in on your second run in the afternoon and complete the other part of your route.
Oh. So when you worked on it, you carried the blocks in the house?
You get the blocks in the wagon and then you cut what the people want. Mm-hmm. on your wagon and take the ice off your wagon into the house. Mm-hmm. Say, for instance, you want a 50-pound block, mm-hmm. a 50-pound piece,
mm-hmm.
and the next person, maybe they want a 100-pound. Mm-hmm. Their refrigerator was a little larger than the one the other person had, maybe. Mm-hmm. And you could then maybe somebody's economizing, they just buy a 10-cent piece, mm-hmm. and they get, I think, about 25 pounds for 10 cents then.
Wow.
And it'd hold them over a day, and then next day you had to go through the same procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And once your box got cold, it kept cold.
Uh-huh. So when you worked on the wagon and took the ice in the house, was it your job to load it in the refrigerator or the ice box for them and everything?
Hold it on your shoulder and open the door. Hit one of them clamps just like you open your refrigerator mm-hmm. now. Well, not now because you got these push too.
Yeah.
But you just clip up and then open, set your ice in there and come on back.
Mm-hmm.
Mark the card. Maybe you pay the end of the week. See, you mm-hmm. didn't have to pay every day if you didn't want to.
What kind of money did you make from the ice man for doing that, helping him out?
About $3 a week.
Was that considered good money then,
though? It was considered good money. Did
you feel like you really
had
to work?
At that time, postman was making 60 cents an hour. Mm-hmm. And they thought they were doing good.
Yeah.
And you was postman, you was making top money.
Because yeah. I remember hearing a lot of people talk about when they got their jobs at the post office, that was quite a big deal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, see, the big money didn't start until after the war, see. Mm-hmm. Then this premium pay started. And that just started running prices on up.
Yeah.
But at that time, you could get a loaf of bread for a nickel.
Shoot.
And you could get bologna, anything like that. It was maybe 10 cents a pound and all like that.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine. Oh, goodness.
But food back there then was much better than it is now. The taste was better. We lose a lot in preparing food to stay a long time. See, and now we got where we can put coloring on it and make it look
you
like it's fresh.
You don't know what for sure you're eating. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But back there then, you got the real meat and the cheese and everything was.
Well, and people grew a lot of their own things and everything.
Yeah.
You knew you were getting stuff fresh out of a garden.
That's right. And then people used to kill hogs back then. They had hogs that they would kill.
Pardon me for just a minute. Had hogs that they killed?
Yeah, everybody practically raised their own meat. Everybody had hogs in the backyard until they got the law that you couldn't raise hogs in the city. Then you had to move out to county, which wasn't very far from where we live, see, about five streets over, and you was in the county. And everybody would go around and kill their hogs. Maybe you kill the day. Well, everybody, maybe four or five of us, go around and kill your hogs. Mm-hmm. Then you prepare your meat and salt it away and put it up, see, and had smoke houses. You smoked your own meat just like you do at the stockyard. Mm-hmm. And you had to put your meat up and hang it up, and you put a bag over it to keep the flies from blowing it, see.
Yeah.
What they call blowing it, you know. Flies and keep them way off it. Mm-hmm. Then red pepper and salt and pepper and stuff would mm-hmm. keep the flies away because they didn't like that. See?
Mm-hmm.
Then you had a smokehouse and then you had the meat. You go in there and you could cut a slab off your bacon. And like we have breakfast bacon, it'd be in one piece and you just take your knife, cut it off, and you could smell it clear across the street.
Mm-hmm. How long did that meat keep in the smokehouse like that? Indefinitely?
Well, indefinitely. They had, it's after cure, after smoked it. It was cured and they kept it in a meat house. And you go out there and get your meat hanging up, see? And this pepper and stuff preserved it, see?
Mm-hmm.
They had it all over there. Wow. And then when you kill your hogs today, then you go with me over to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody had to pay anybody to kill the hog. You just went around and
everybody helped each other.
Mm-hmm. And we had one old man live down there across from where the school is today. We call him Holland Johnson.
Harlan?
Holland.
Holland Johnson.
Yeah. You could hear him holler so loud that everybody called him Holland Johnson. And that old man had a long knife that he always carried. And he was ruptured somewhat. And he was kind of elderly man. And he could throw a hog down and run that knife in his throat so quick just like that. And he'd tell you right quick, turn him loose. And they'd kill him. And then when they kill hogs, they used to put them in a barrel and scrape them, put them in the hot water, and then scrape all the hair off of them.
Mm-hmm.
And kids used to like to get around there, you know, and they kept fire boiling. That time they had metal pots, kettles,
mm-hmm.
you've seen those
mm-hmm.
pictures of some of them. And we, it was our duty to keep the fire, keep wood under there and keep that water hot so they could scald.
Well, that was your job as a child.
Yeah, as a child. And mm-hmm. especially to kill him at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd stick him down in a barrel, have the barrel on about a 45 degree angle.
Mm-hmm.
Propped up and they stick him head down there and come along, skin that, knock that hair off with a knife. So after this hot water hit it,
mm-hmm.
that hair would shave off even.
Oh.
And then they turn him around and put him back in there again, the rear end,
mm-hmm.
and get that. And then when he come out, they gambled him, put him up on the what they call a block and tackle, pull him up and
mm-hmm.
wedge his feet that way, and then they would split him open and take his entrances out,
mm-hmm.
and they cooked them too, that back then mm-hmm. the days, and the mm-hmm. lights and the livers and all.
Mm-hmm.
And around there, most of the time, they cut the liver right from the hog right then, see.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of the people, the women of the house, they would cook maybe the liver while the rest of them is finishing working. And it was nice and tender.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. We don't even get meat like that anymore. Gee. You were telling me an interesting story, too, about that little drugstore. Yeah. Was close to you. What was the story about that, and who's the fellow that had that place? First black drugstore.
Yeah, Dr. Duncan. It was the first black in the West End. Mm. And he lived on Virginia Avenue, right across from where the school, Virginia Avenue School, is today, mm-hmm. and which is about 3619 Virginia. Well, he had three daughters and one son. And they helped to, to take care of the drugstores, clerks.
Mm-hmm. Where was his drugstore located?
3619 Virginia Avenue.
Oh, it was. Oh, I thought you were saying that's where he live there?
Well, he lived there, too, but in the front, he had this drugstore. He had it built, a drugstore out front.
Oh.
And then they lived in the rear.
Oh.
Yeah.
And he was the first black druggist
in the West End.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and tell some more about him.
And he built quite a bit of trade from the way he operated. As I explained to you before, he would, if he didn't have it, what you wanted, he would go to the Zahn's at 28 and Greenwood on his bicycle and come back and deliver your goods just the same. And he didn't care how many trips he made, it didn't make him any difference. And he built his trade up that
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really a nice man to talk to. And he was really the children's hangout place.
Mm-hmm.
The drug
you
store.
Went there a lot as a child then, huh?
Yeah, a lot of them would hang out there. They would had a fountain, see. And they would get these sundaes and Cokes and thing like that, see.
Uh-huh. I've often missed the old drugstore fountains.
Yeah.
Oh, they were nice. Cokes tasted different even then than they
do
now.
It did, really did.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So.
I know. Another thing we talked about earlier was the, how do people get water?
Out of this
when
pump.
You were a kid.
Out of this pump, you had an old pump, you pump up and down. They drilled for water. Everybody had, see, there's water underground everywhere you can drill, but they had some kind of way they knew what to, these old fellas that used to drill wells,
mm-hmm.
they pretty much know some kind of way that they, where this water was.
Mm-hmm.
And they drill a hole, and the first they dig a hole about, about 10 feet deep, and the wall around it with bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take another and dig further down, send the pipe further down. And then some way or another they hit water down there.
Mm-hmm.
And this pipe just draws this water. Evidently, the water must have been running under the ground
mm-hmm.
at these places.
Did everybody have one?
Everybody had a pump in their own yard. Very mm-hmm. seldom you found anybody that didn't have one.
Did you have to pay for that extra to get that done, or was it?
Oh yeah, you had to pay.
You had
for
to
that.
Pay to have
yeah.
that pump put in your yard.
We had one fellow lived out at 37 in Southern. They called him Pump Duncan.
Pump Duncan.
He was worked on all kind of pumps, and he drilled water. And then we had another one, Mr. Gaither. He was a water man, and he done a lot of work. And a few others. We didn't have plumbers then.
Yeah.
These fellows were just gifted with the knowledge of how to do these things.
Mm-hmm. Who were you saying? Somebody around here, you mentioned, still has a pump, has one of the original pumps in the yard.
Yeah.
Is
that's
near you?
That's Miss Metcalf, Jessie Metcalf. Well, it isn't too far from me. She's a member of my church.
Mm.
And I just happened to be passing there about a couple of months ago, and I looked at it, and I said, well, they still got this old pump out here. And you used to pump your razor handle up and down that way and pump, and
mm-hmm.
then water would come out through something like a...
A trough kind of thing?
It would, the pump was made, it would come up and then you had just kind of like a faucet,
yeah.
And when you pump this handle, it goes up here and it's come up and down. you'd work the handle up and down, and that would draw this water. It had a suction on the bottom, and then the water would come out here. Something like a faucet on your house.
Yeah, right.
But it's a historical place. If you'd ever, you can just drive by that place and
where
see
it. Where is it? Where'd you say?
It's on Sunset, about 39th and Sunset. Mm.
Did you ever ask her how come she kept the old pump in her yard? That's kind of interesting.
Never did take it up. It'd be a collector's item today.
Oh,
and
sure
be worth money, I imagine. They're in the, I think he's 81 years old, and they're active in the church. He's a deacon of my church, and she's a choir member.
Oh, my gosh, and they're in their
80s. He's a, and he sings in the Mayo chorus. So they're really good, and he has good health for his age, mm-hmm. both of them, and mm-hmm. they're dedicated to church and service like that.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to go by and see that spot. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Get an idea.
Well, the way you would see it, you'd go down Greenwood to 38th Street and go turn left, which way you'd be coming from town. Oh, I could tell you another route, but that would be the easiest way. Come down Greenwood to 38th Street,
mm-hmm.
come out 38th Street to Grand, which is one block.
Right.
And then turn right and go down, the street just curves on around by the house.
Oh.
And they sit on the street right on Sunset between Grand and Hale.
Okay, I know the approximate area of where it is. I'll have to drive by that. That really is interesting.
And the last old pump, we used to have a pump at 36 in Greenwood, what they call a public pump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was larger than the average pump. And people would stop there. They had a barrel cut in two, and they watered their horses there. Mm-hmm. And anybody that didn't have a pump, they could go to this pump and get water.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had one at 10th and Oak.
Community pumps, is that what they were called?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And that was the last one that went out of existence with 10th and Oak.
Because I imagine for a lot of people, even getting a pump put in your yard must have been pretty expensive.
Well, back in those days, I doubt it run over $10 to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had water for life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's true. Huh.
Of course, $10 was quite a bit of money back then, those
days.
Yeah,
it's too bad we can't pay $10 and get water for life now, huh?
Well, I thought of this water that in the Greenwood Cemetery was right around that close, and we got to thinking about all this dead people and all this going down into the water, and I think that's the reason they cut those pumps out and put everybody having city water.
Yeah,
but it
never
was
know.
Nice, cold water. And down at the State Fairground, they had what they call a sulfur pump. Down there, they had sulfur water. I don't know where it come from, but they had dug down in the ground and hit sulfur water.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to go there to get it,
mm-hmm.
right behind where Miles Park is now.
Mm-hmm.
Right over behind Pavilion.
You were mentioning some things about some of the other parks, too. What kind of park facilities did you have when you were a kid, lived in the Parkland area? Were there any parks?
Well, as I say, we at that time, the only one we had was 34th in Greenwood,
mm-hmm.
which was a small little park. They had played baseball and few little thing like that.
Mm-hmm. So it was a small neighborhood park for blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Was when did any of the other parks come along? Or?
Well, I'm a poor hand on dates.
Yeah. Well, if you can just remember approximately. Was Chickasaw Park in existence when you were a kid, or did that come along later?
Oh, it was it came while I was growing up. But as I said, we used to go down where Chickasaw is and pick potatoes. There was a farm there, Whalen, Colonel Whalen.
Mm-hmm.
And he donated that ground that Chickasaw has today to the blacks because they didn't have a park.
Wow.
Only that little park up there.
See. Yeah, right. So he donated that whole area.
He donated the whole ground. Him and C.J. Cronin, they had farms close together there.
Mm-hmm.
But Whalen was the one donated the ground for Chickasaw Park.
Did you remember when that opened up and going there? Was that quite a deal for Blackstaff Park in those
days?
Oh,
yeah, that was quite a deal at that time. And they appreciated that park well when it was strong. At one time, they used to go up Cherokee Park and have picnics. But that came later after Chickasaw opened. And eventually Shawnee Park was right out the street from it, and Fountain Fair was over at Market Street, and one Shawnee was at Broadway, just opposite, a few blocks from Chickasaw Park. And then it went over to Fountain Fair.
But Chickasaw was the first park that was opened up.
Yeah.
Decent sized park for blacks. Yeah. What about White City? A couple people that have been old time residents have mentioned White City to me too. What was that?
Well, that was a park, something similar to what Fountain Fair was. I think after the White City burned down, then Fountain Fair opened up over there.
Where was White City? About where was it located?
Right across from Chickasaw, right at the foot of Greenwood. Chickasaw was on this side, there's a rail streetcar track, and White City was on the other. And I remember years ago that we used to haul lumber from down there where White City was with horse and wagon then. And back then.
Were blacks allowed to go to White City at all? Or was that strictly a park for whites?
It was strictly for white, but they had the privilege of going there on school. After school let out, like classes had the picnic
in
school
year,
out
kind of
end
thing?
Of the year in June. And they were allowed to go there on those days. But others, they had this little park about 34th in Virginia, 34th in Greenwood, which was called Greenwood Park, I believe.
You mentioned, too, something about the old-time funeral directors. What was it we were calling?
The Hacks, and we had White Horses.
Yeah,
for,
right. Men, talk
had
about
White
that.
Horses for young people and older people. They had Black Horses.
Undertaker, that was Undertaker. The word I was looking for.
The Undertakers, and then they had these fellows that drove the horses. They wore high hats and tails. And at that time, the Undertaker, they wore tails and gamble striped pants.
So it was really quite a spectacular thing when a funeral was going
and
on.
And the only four people was two, we call them surgeons, and he drove the horses. And
What was that, too, that was a kind of a gruesome story about the cooling board?
at that time, they had Undertakers come to your house at that time. Somebody die, you call Undertaker, he bring his case. He had about three cases. And one was this cooling board that folded up, resembled an ironing board today. And after he washed the people off, they'd have to give him soap and water in a tub.
And then he'd do it right there in their home.
In the home, yeah. And usually you laid them out in the living room, in the, what we call the front room. And after he performed all this, and of course you had outhouses, and sometimes they just take it and whatever they get, in embalming, they just put in the outhouse. And then they lay them on this cooling board, and then after a certain length of time, the next day they come back and dress them. And then they embalm them, and then they put them out, and 2 days they're ready to be buried.
So people came to the house instead of going to a funeral home.
They came to the house for the morning, and then went to
bury them.
And then at that time, people, when you had a death in the family, people far and near would come, and they'd some people would bring food, and you sit up all night.
Awake.
The family,
kind of thing.
Yeah. The family never did go to bed. People were there. Of course, some would go to bed at different times, But as long as the body was there, people sit up. They never did close up the house. Wow. Of course, they didn't break in like they do today.
Yeah, I was going to say. You could get away with doing that in those days. Yeah. Oh, gosh. That's quite something. Well, let's get back a little bit more about, you have so many interesting memories, but you finished night school in 27.
Yeah.
And then did you go right to work after that? What kind of work did you do?
Well, first I started over here at the American Tobacco Company. Mm-hmm. And it was a branch of 18th and Broadway. And down at 30th and Madison, they had a branch office, and they made tuxedo tobacco. Smoking tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also made the mixture down there. That's what I done, help of making mixtures. And mm-hmm. they cooked this liquid that they put over the tobacco to make different Lucky Strike cigarettes and tuxedo tobacco. And of course, they then added a lot more now.
Mm-hmm.
But my job was to prepare the stuff for the man that cooked. They had what they call a cooker, and they had lots of big vests.
Mm-hmm.
And we would put it on in the morning, and then ever so often we'd add different things. They had cooked so much together. Now there was brown sugar and licorice, and there's rum. And cocoa and maple sugar.
Oh, and you added all that to the pot as
the
day went
on. They all go in the pot together, and they had some kind of brown stuff. I forget the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they used to put so much in at a certain time. In other words, maybe the liquids had to cook longer than the maple sugar. And then they had brown sugar. They had two different kinds of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And the cocoa, and then they keep stirring it, and then at a certain time to run it off. And then they put it in a container, and then they ship it on out to maybe up here at 18th Street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long did you stay working there?
Well, I worked there about 7 years. Then I got a job at the Willetiers Apartments.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you were then during the
17 years. I stayed there.
Good.
Left there and went to quartermaster. Mm-hmm. Stayed over there 3.5 years. Come back to Rental Metal Company. Stayed there to 59.
What'd you do at Reynolds Metal?
Oh, I was oiler. I was drain oil from the mills.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a foil for cigarettes and things.
I talked to a few people over there. Yeah. I didn't realize that you'd worked over there. I'll be darned.
And see this oil, they run over there, and so it'll wrap and it won't tear.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of the shift, this oil that done run down, and you got the empty at the bottom, see, mm-hmm. in the pan, little thing. And I used to empty oil over there in the finishing department.
Mm-hmm. How long did you work there then?
I worked there about 9 years, and then I went to waiting table. I worked with Jay Kahn's head waiter there for quite a while, and then when the GE moved in here, they took part of the building that was the banquet part,
mm-hmm.
where I worked, see, part of work. So they made offices out of that. I went to the Rialto's Theater across the street where they had other offices, and I told them I applied for a job over there. So they said, well, since GE came here and put you out of work, said the first opening we'll call you. In about 3 or 4 days, they called me. But I couldn't go because they had these other appointments with the parties.
Mm-hmm.
So they waited 5 days, and then I was able to go on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out there and stayed 22.5 years out there.
Heavens. And you've had a working career.
I left one job. I never was out of the job a day in my life. I left one and went to the other, mm-hmm. and then from then to the other.
Wow. When did you get married along the line there? Somewhere?
Yeah, I married in 27.
In 27. Right when you graduated from high school.
Right.
Is your wife still living today?
Yeah, she's living.
And how many children did you have?
We had three.
Oh.
One boy and two girls.
Oh.
And we've had our 50th anniversary. We didn't have our 50th wedding date.
When was it? When
in
it?
March 28th.
Oh, so you just passed your 50th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
Does it seem like 50 years?
It really don't.
You better, I was going to say, you better be careful how you answer that, or I'll have to send this tape to your wife.
but now, it's, people would say that couldn't be done. But we have lived together all this time, married all this time. And I've got my first time to hit her as a fight. And she got her first time to curse me. I curse her. We've never had any fights. We've had some arguments, you know.
Yeah.
But when it
but
comes
you've
down to
blow. Never had to hit her, and she's never had to
never
curse
had to. And that was one of our things that we had when agreement when we married.
Oh.
If I got to curse and fight, we don't need each other. But
that's
we get along
marvelous.
Fine. But I mean, we've had some terrible arguments now. I don't see this.
Who hasn't?
When it comes to blows, it wasn't there. I grew up with that, and I don't like to see a man hit a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't want to do that because I would be taking advantage of the person.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't want you to hit a man, a man hit a woman, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
But we grew up that way. Our parents taught us that.
You grew up not seeing it, and so you just didn't feel like that was necessary.
No, and our parents always told us respect our sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do things to take advantage of people.
Yeah. You learn how to treat other people by the families you're raised in. There's no doubt about it.
That's right.
My goodness. Of course, you've lived all over Parkland. I can't believe this.
Yeah.
What kind of things have made you stay in Parkland in return?
Well, it was just a home place for me. And everybody, at one time, I knew everybody in Parkland. But now you don't know.
A lot of new people moved in.
Been, and it's built up so, like I say, at that time, houses were far between.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked all the time, and I just satisfied where I was, see. And then she grew up out of Parkland.
Oh, your wife did too?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so we all knew each other, and I live one square to the church. My church is a Baptist church. And
what's
hers,
the name of your church?
First Virginia Avenue Baptist, and she's Philip Memorial, which is a Methodist church on the next block.
Oh.
So you come down the street, and she turned this way, and I turned this way.
And you've done that for 50 years. Oh, my Lord. Oh, that was another thing when you reminded me when you mentioned the church. We're almost running out of time, but I wanted you to mention about your experience with the Scouts, Boy Scouts in the Parkland area. I thought that was real interesting, too. Can you tell me a little bit about that, and do you remember about when that was?
Well, it was in 27, and we used to, Reverend A. Shoemaker was pastor then, and we decided Mr. R.M. Wheat was commissioner of Scouts, and at that time he went around to different places and organized scouting. And he came to our place, and naturally the pastor, he looked over and he said, can we find a good man to that we could send to take training? He said we'd be willing to give him training.
Were there any black scoutmasters at this point?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there may have been some other place, but not in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, well, we want to start a troop, a scout troop of this church. So he gave us a number, and then we went to training class and graduated with they gave a certificate for it and taught you all the different manners of scouting, see.
And you were picked for that, then?
I was picked, and I was sent, and I was first a black scout master in the West End, Troop 84.
Troop 84. So that was the year then that you graduated from high school and you got married. You became a scoutmaster then. Did you stay with it for many years? Was it
I stayed with it until I started to work at night, see, and I had to give it up at night.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like it was really important for the kids?
It was. I'd put my heart into it, and Well, anything I go into, I try to make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the boys from far and near, they kind of fell in line, and we had a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
We had knots and all these different things, and it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big troop at one time, and quite natural when I had to go off, well, it started falling off somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
But they got a good troop there now.
Mm-hmm.
So
do you feel like it was really important thing for the little fellas to have a chance to
It was,
be in
just
scouts?
Like I say, when I taught them how to remember things, you know, just like I told you about
mm-hmm.
those scout laws, to have them trustworthy, lawyer, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I taught them as a song, and then it soaked into their mm-hmm. minds, and it wasn't hard for them to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do things thoroughly for the benefit of the people, see.
Mm-hmm.
And that way we had a good time, and I mean, we learned quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the different knots, and of course, at that time, there wasn't many Eagle Scouts.
Yeah.
But they started